Broadcasting from the WRVC studio in downtown Huntington, here's Gene Dean.
And thank you, Ernie, even though I know you're on vacation, but we're playing the usual recording. And in the producer's studio is my good friend, Alan Sturm. Glad that you're here to fill in for Ernie. Thanks, Alan. Well, we've got a lot to tell you about today, and we're going to start out by saying that the month of November is National Hospice Month. And so I want to talk to several ladies from our own Huntington Hospice and to tell you about some of the things that are coming up. And in case you don't really know what hospice does, we're going to tell you some of the medical side of it too. So let me introduce our guests. First of all, Dr. Ann Conjura, who is the medical director at hospice. Dr. Conjura, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, well, you're very kind to have us.
I'm delighted. And sitting next to me is Kelly Levy, who is the Vice President of Family Services.
Hello, thank you.
And I want you to get right up close to that microphone. And sitting over in the corner and saying that she's not going to say anything is our good friend Shelley Betts, who's the Director of Development and Community Relations. And hello, I'm waving at Shelley. All right, let's start out by talking about the medical side of hospice. I think that, Dr. Conjura, sometimes people think that the hospice is just a place where people go when they're at the very end of their life, that they just lie there and fade away. But that's not quite the way it happens, is it?
That's not quite the way it happens at all.
Okay.
Hospice is not really a place at all. It is a type of care that is provided to patients who have life-limiting illness that focuses on improving their quality of life, relieving symptoms, and paying attention to the whole person, their spiritual concerns and needs, their psychological concerns and needs, their social needs, as well as their medical needs, which can be very enormous.
I wasn't really thinking of anything except the hospice house, I guess, when I said a place where they go. But, of course, you do provide in-home services, don't you?
In fact, most of our patients are in their homes. We
really?
Do have 14 inpatient beds at the new hospice house, which has been in mm-hmm. operation for a year. Some of our patients are in the hospital if they need that level of care to control symptoms, or if they've just been admitted to hospice and need continuing inpatient care. But the vast majority of our patients are in their homes or other facilities such as nursing homes, personal care homes, places of that nature.
What determines what their location? Is it a matter of choice? Or?
A main determinant is their caregiving needs and whether they have a family and a home that can provide the level of care that they need. And then whether they're inpatient or outpatient is determined by their symptoms that they're having, whether they can be controlled in the home, and sometimes if they're very close to the end of life, they're needing frequent adjustments of medications and they need inpatient treatment.
When we talk about services, medical services in particular, you're the director of medical services, so you have what, registered nurses, you have doctors?
Well, I'm one of the medical directors,
one
so I'm not going to take credit for the whole ball of wax. But the hospice philosophy is team-oriented, and a team would consist of a physician, nursing, social workers, bereavement counselors, chaplain. Have I left anybody out, Kelly?
CNAs,
right, the
LPNs.
The health aides and LPNs.
When you say physician, would that be the person's individual physician, or is it a physician that is specifically attached to hospice, or how does that work?
Well, all of our patients have an attending physician who has participated in certifying that they're appropriate for the hospice level of care. In most cases, that's their primary or their personal physician who remains as their attending. And then they get assistance from the medical directors, whatever level of assistance the attending desires as far as their pain and other symptom management. We are the attendings on a small subset of patients who might not have had a primary doctor before they were enrolled in hospice.
How many medical directors are there then at hospice?
Well, there are two of us full-time,
Dr.
Mm-hmm. David Daniels and myself, and mm-hmm. then we have several others part-time, working part-time right now.
And as you say, the house can accommodate, I think you said 14.
We have 14 inpatient beds.
But the total number of patients that you're serving, it probably varies, but what's the average total?
Our census is running between 170 and 180 patients.
That's a huge number.
It is, and it's gone up enormously over the past couple of years.
Is that because more and more people are becoming aware of the services that hospice provides, you think?
Absolutely. There's been a lot of outreach by the organization to advertise the services and benefits of hospice and help physicians as well recognize when their patients might be appropriate for hospice care.
Okay. Now, Kelly, you're the Vice President of Family Services. That sounds really grand.
It doesn't it? Yeah.
Who's the President of Family Services?
I'm not sure.
Tell me what being Vice President of Family Services hospice entails.
That encompasses the social work piece that we offer the patients and families, the bereavement piece, which is offered to the families after the death, the chaplain services. And so it's that whole component that's caring for the family, because when we sign up a patient for hospice, it's as much for the family as it is for the patient.
And you're the one who coordinates this then along with the medical services.
Absolutely,
I guess.
Because again, it's a team approach. When someone's enrolls in hospice, they're assigned a team, and the team consists of the RN, a social worker, the CNA, the physician, and that team is dedicated to their care so that there's continuity throughout.
It's very interesting that you provide the counseling services following the death of a person, for the family, in other words. And with the holidays coming up, I've always heard that it's much more difficult for the family, for those who have lost a loved one. Do you find additional pressure, additional need for services at this time of the year?
Well, and I hear a lot of people say that because the holiday times, I think they do increase people's sensitivity to the loss that they've had. You know, holidays, Christmas, Thanksgiving, they're by and large a happy time, but when you're remembering the loss of someone, it can be very bittersweet. And so I think the holiday times cause a lot of people to reminisce, and memories can be good, and sometimes they can be sad. So yes, holidays can prove a challenge for folks.
Are your counseling services limited to those who have had someone in hospice, or are there counseling services available to anyone who has lost someone, not necessarily that person being involved with hospice?
Good question. Our services are available to all of the families that we've served, but I have to tell you, our bereavement services are also available to the community. So we run a series of support groups. We have counselors that can meet with folks one-on-one. We do a bereavement camp for children, and all of those services are available to the community as well. And I have to say, they're free of charge.
Oh, that's always good to know. So do you do it in the form of one-on-one counseling, or is it in the form of perhaps a round table or something? How do you do it?
A variety of services. Part of that is assessing what the need might be. Some people want and need one-on-one, and that feels right to them. We do offer a series of support groups, sessions, and then a series of like roundtable classes on a variety of topics, so that hopefully there's something for anyone.
Right, fill their need, their particular need. Dr. Conjura, this is National Hospice Month. Does this make a difference in any way to what you're doing, or is it just simply a time when it draws more attention to the services that hospice provides?
I think that it helps increase awareness of the services that are available. I like to call hospice one of the best-kept secrets. If people knew what was available, I think that you'd see a lot more people tapping into those services earlier in their illness than they might otherwise. So
I was looking at the newspaper yesterday, and in fact I clipped this long advertisement out because it took my attention so much, and I don't know if Kelly or Shelley, which one of you would like to address this, but I do want our... Shelley, would you like to change with Kelly or just draw up your chair here?
We can probably talk about it together.
Okay, let's put the microphone right in between you there, and we should be able to do this. But this struck me as being something very unusual. Obviously, the services of hospice, although some of them are free, nevertheless, it costs money to keep a project of this nature going, so you do have fundraisers from time to time, and I'm not sure that this could really be classified as a fundraiser, but...
Not really. There are a number of activities that we're doing as part of National Hospice Month. One of the things that we're going to be doing next week is having a community viewing of a film released actually last spring by the title of 2 Weeks. And this film basically focuses on the end-of-life issues that one family goes through when the mother is given a terminal diagnosis. And the children come home to help get things in order and care for her for what they think is just going to be a few days. But it ends up being a 2 week period of time where they're in the home together and all the dynamics that go along with someone coming to acceptance of what's about to happen with the mother. And so we're doing that as a community outreach effort and tying that in with the celebration for National Hospice Month. But what's really unique about them, Kelly and her staff is going to be hosting a panel discussion following the film to talk about these issues, and maybe she can shed a little bit more light about that.
Yeah. And all that clunking around is me moving the microphone. Go ahead, Kelly.
Yeah. Well, I think that the opportunity that the movie presents for us is to stimulate discussion about what we would and would not want done at the end of our lives, and to stimulate discussion among family members about what's important to them. And we're hoping that the movie might do that for folks, so that they can discuss with their families what's important mm-hmm. to them, what they would not want done, and the challenges and the beauty of that when that is able to happen.
And this is a professional film. I mean, it stars.